Walmart is expanding its home delivery service. It'll serve more than 100 metro areas, up from six cities now. By year end, the U.S.'s largest retailer will expand that program to 40% of U.S. households. Customers will go online or to the app to fill their carts. They have to order at least $30 worth of goods. A personal shopper at a nearby store picks and scans items. Then delivery companies like Uber transport the goods to the home. Deliveries will cost $9.95.
A brain implant to decode complex speech signals could soon be a reality, thanks to wonder material graphene. A pan-European team of scientists is using graphene in a bid to give people with brain injury their voice back. Brain-computer interfaces already exist and can decode basic cortical signals to control robotic limbs. But current implants are bulky and can't process complex neural patterns, like those related to speech. Graphene, which is just one atom thick, could be the answer.
Tens of thousands of students are taking their frustration outside of the classroom Wednesday in a nationwide walkout demanding tougher gun laws and walking in solidarity with students from Florida's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where last month 17 students and staff were killed in a shooting rampage. But it's part of a much larger student-led movement for gun control that emerged immediately after the Parkland attack.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's March 15th, 2018. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on the program, and Brett McKittrick is here from Associated Bank. We're going to talk a little bit about some ways you can improve your financial health through your workplace. That's coming up in our conversation a little bit later on. Values-based leadership in business will be the topic of our second segment. But right now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 54, NASDAQ up 5, S&P up 3. Crude oil's at $61 a barrel this morning, which is up about 5 cents a barrel. Around the world, in London, markets are higher. Same situation in Germany, where the markets are up almost 0.5%. And in France, the same situation. In Asia, markets are generally mixed. The Nikkei is higher. The Hang Seng is higher. The Shanghai is lower this morning. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. The Senate has passed bipartisan legislation easing bank rules that were enacted after the financial crisis to prevent a relapse. Senate voted 67-31 for a bill from Republican Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho that would scale back provisions of the law known as Dodd-Frank. The bill is particularly aimed at helping small and community and medium-sized businesses, but critics argue the likelihood of future taxpayer bailouts will increase if it becomes law. You remember 2008 and what happened then? The Dodd-Frank law was passed in response to that. The House has already passed more expansive legislation, and now lawmakers will try to work out a compromise that both chambers can support. That may be difficult as negotiators try to appease GOP lawmakers without losing the support of core of Democratic senators who backed Crapo's banking legislation. There's some developing news this morning regarding Unilever, the Anglo-Dutch consumer goods multinational, whose brands include Dove. Ben & Jerry's says it is basing its headquarters in the Netherlands, ending a long-standing structure of head offices in Rotterdam and London. Unilever making the announcement early today as part of a raft of structural changes it said will turn the company into a simpler, more agile-focused business. It's Thought Leader Thursday. Brett McKittrick is here from Associated Bank. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about financial health at work and some other HR-related items. Brett is SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting. And Brett, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the compensation we've been getting. There's been a lot of attention paid to bonuses that have been handed out since the tax cuts went into effect, and that versus pay raises. Tell us about what is in the news more. Is it the pay raises or the bonuses?
You know, it's the bonuses, and sort of unfortunately. I say that because since 2009, when the recession was in full swing and employers looked to cut costs, they stopped doing what? Giving merit increases and bonuses. Now, as the economy has picked up and we're seeing things like tax reform put more money back into corporations' pockets, we're seeing some of that trickle down to more income and salary for the employee, but we're seeing it in the form of bonuses instead of wage increases. And that's not as good for employees from the simple fact that a wage increase, you know, capitalizes on itself, right? And it's progressive. And from a long-term financial security standpoint, any employee would rather see that instead of a one-time bonus. Bonuses are taxed at a higher rate, a higher withholding rate, excuse me. And so that's less money in that employee's pocket at that point in time in which they receive that bonus.
Okay, a couple of things. I didn't know that. Repeat that again.
So the withholding rate for most bonuses is higher than the withholding rate for salary. Now, that doesn't mean it's necessarily taxed more at the, you know, when the true up at the end of the year when a person files the 1040, depending on what their income level actually is, you know, they may get some of that money actually back. But at that time in which you're receiving that bonus, they're technically getting a little less than what they would have as in terms of a salary increase normal pay.
So, if you know, a lot's been in the news lately about $1,000 bonuses to folks. Mm-hmm. What does that end up being, like $900, $800 after more withholding?
Yeah, it's a little less.
Yeah. And this is interesting, too, because with the last jobs report, we paid a lot of attention to wages in that report. But the bonuses aren't included in that wages part of that report.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And so that's a little misleading in and of itself to see that. And you see, and really this is a cause of, or one of the many causes of what the phenomenon is referred to as wage stagnation. Yeah. We're not seeing a lot of those increases across the board because of the bonuses. And unfortunately, this might be a sign of things to come.
Meaning that this could be the way it happens from here on out. Instead of getting a pay raise, we get a bonus.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about what we might be able to do from an employee standpoint if we get one of the bonuses versus a pay raise. Is this something that's negotiable with employers?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we've come to a point where a lot of employees, those that were employed during that recessionary time or maybe who became unemployed during that time, they're coming back and we're many employees are still in the mindset of, I'm happy to have this job. Now, we see that change from a generational perspective. We've certainly talked about generational implications in the workplace in the past. And when we see newer employees come into the workforce and maybe that younger generation may be more accustomed to setting their own terms, they could push more for those merit-based increases. The problem is we're looking at what's referred to as more of a gig economy. We're seeing more contract workers. We're seeing people paid more in a piecemeal fashion instead of that salary or hourly wage. And as a result, bonuses, fit that structure a little more easily.
And if this is going to be the way things are in the future, with the job market tightening, this could be one of those things where you leave a job and go find somebody who's going to actually give you a pay raise.
It's possible, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other part of the news recently. Pay equity has been in the news. Some companies have started reviewing their policies. Mm-hmm. How does that even begin at a company?
How does a company begin to review?
To review pay schedules versus men versus women.
Sure. Well, a company first has to acknowledge that there is a problem. It might not be a problem in that particular organization, mm-hmm. but they have to do some studies and wage analysis to see if it really is a problem. There's a study, and you may be getting to this, but I want to mention it now, a Stanford study where they looked at pay equity in Uber. And they took 2 years of Uber drivers, right? And this is the epitome of that gig economy, more or less quote unquote contract workers that are paid as W-2 employees by Uber, right? Mm-hmm. And they looked at 2 years worth of drivers, men and women, and found that there is a 7% disparity between what a male driver made versus what a female driver made. Male driver made a higher rate. Now, the Uber system is based on a gender-neutral algorithm of pay. There's a million things that go into that algorithm. So what the Stanford study looked at is, why is this happening? And there were a bunch of different factors, some of which, you know, things that we typically or may think of stereotypical. Men drive 2.2% faster than female drivers. So over the course of a year, a male driver can pick up more riders than a female driver. Thus, they might make a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. Men typically work more on undesirable shifts in the evening. And men would do longer trips such as airport shuttles, things of that nature, which were, cause a higher increase in terms of what they are being paid. Suffice to say, what the Stanford study found is there's no one single issue as to why, or reason as to why, men made 7% more than women at Uber. It wasn't designed to be that way. And so what you end up having is a company that maybe identifies a disparity in pay, but it takes a lot to really solve it because there's no one single issue causing that.
Yeah, and in that case, it seems the solution seems harder because unless women are going to be driving those other shifts, doing more of that work. But on the flip side, I mean, aren't women safer drivers? So you have fewer accidents with women.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah. That's true as well.
Review that we had Challenger Grain Christmas on the program recently, and they talked about 48% of companies are actually doing this review. So business mm-hmm. offices are interviewing managers in their companies and also going even to some employees and saying, hey, here's what we're doing. Is the transparency the key here to making sure this goes smoothly in a workplace?
I think it's a big step in the right direction. You know, when you're that transparent, you are acknowledging, if you find that there is a problem and say pay disparity, you're acknowledging that problem and you're upfront about it. And even as you're investigating that problem, I think it sends a message to employees that you care.
I know the Me Too movement has been a big driving factor in the reexamination of some of this. But the other part of it, if you look at the data, women are re-entering the workforce at really big numbers over the last year or two.
Sure.
And so how has that impact the review of all of this going on and the movement forward?
Well, you know, part of it is, and again, this is another potential cause of that pay disparity. When female employees re-enter that workforce, oftentimes it's after taking time off through the birth or adoption of a child, and they want to stay home with the kids for a little bit of time, right? Well, when they come back in, there's a gap in there, obviously, in terms of that work experience. And they may be coming back in at a lower wage than what they normally would be at if they had kept working for that period of time. The problem is, are they coming back in at a lower wage than a similarly qualified male employee coming in at that similar time off?
You recently did some presentations on financial wellness in the workplace.
Yeah.
What are we talking about there?
So, you know, we all are aware of health wellness, right? Mm-hmm. And employee well-being as a whole. And what's become a really hot topic in this area is a holistic approach to employee well-being, which really includes financial wellness. And if you entertain this quick study that was done by the American Psychological Association, they surveyed, I think, around 5,000 employees all over the United States. This was a couple of years ago, by the way. And these employees were all in different industries, public and private sector alike. And they asked these employees a bunch of different questions really about themselves. And I want to focus on three of the questions they asked. One of the questions they asked was, do you consider yourself to be obese or not? One of the questions asked, are you a tobacco user or not? And then the third question that was asked, again, among a multitude of questions, was, do you consider yourself to be financially stressed during your work time? Hmm. 20% consider themselves to be tobacco users. 30% consider themselves to be obese. 70% identified themselves as having financial stress at that time at work. Well, think about how many resources and money we pour into health wellness at workplaces. And what are the two biggest factors they focus on? The two highest risk factors to a person's health?
Yeah.
Tobacco usage and obesity. Well, that's only covering 20 and 30% of your entire population.
Right.
I'm not saying we shouldn't focus on that, but we're missing the boat on that 70%. Well, what's the problem with missing the boat on that 70%? That financial stress in the workplace can manifest itself in a number of different health concerns for that particular employee, as well as absenteeism mm-hmm. and presenteeism, right? When that person should be doing their job, they're thinking about their own finances. If organizations can meet that employee at their particular place of need, which in this area might be financial concern, then they're doing a better job of enabling that employee to succeed in the workplace.
So, you know, the first two of those, you can offer exercise programs, smoking cessation. How do you address the financial wellness part of that if you're the employer?
Yeah, it's much more complicated because that financial stress can come from a number of different things. You know, it could be debt from the employee, it could be other financial woes in terms of, am I saving enough for retirement? So, you know, an employer is only the employer. How paternal or maternal can that employer really be, and how much behavioral change can they influence? And should it even be their role to influence in that regard? And so I think an employer can offer educational programs, resources, and things to help that employee, again, meet them at their place of need to usher them into a place of better financial security.
I would imagine that this is a tightrope that the employer walks, because you want to encourage all of the things, the health that you've talked about. But at the same time, I would imagine that an employee might feel a little uneasy talking about their finances.
Yeah. In our space, we talk about the idea of wellness programs. Are you doing them for an employee or to an employee? Mm. And so in that regard, an employee might feel like, hey, this is really invasive. And it's also hard to find an employee champion in this regard. You know, think about health. If you can prop an employee up and they're happy to tell their story about how maybe you saved them from a heart attack by helping them change their diet and active lifestyle. Well, what employee is going to go up and say, hey, I was almost in bankruptcy. Look at me now. You know, systemically and socially, it's a very different animal.
But it can be done. There are examples of it being done in places like, there are people that have stood up that said, hey, listen, this did nearly happen to me, and they've pulled other people up with them, haven't they?
Yeah, it is possible. And really, it comes back to the culture of the organization. Mm-hmm. First of all, if an employer engages in any type of employee well-being or wellness program, it can't just be looking for a return on that investment, because you might not find it, or it might take a long time to find it. It's got to be culturally relevant within your organization, and you as an organization philosophically have to really believe in that. And once you do, it is important, to your point, Steve, of finding that employee champion, finding those voices amongst your employees, because that just promotes the buy-in.
I'm guessing this might be an area ripe for a third party to come in and do it anonymously, so that the employer and employee never have to have this conversation.
Yeah, much like on the health side. Yeah. You know, we have protected health information, mm-hmm. so an employer engages in a third party to help them on that. This isn't protected in the same way, maybe from a regulatory perspective, but from a sensitivity perspective, it is.
The end result is making sure you have a happy, healthy workforce, and the benefits are great for employers to do that.
It really is. And going back to our earlier discussion about wages and bonuses, right? This is another way for employers to really differentiate themselves and become that employer of choice. If recruitment and retention is important to that employer, you do, to your point, want to make that employee feel comfortable in the workspace and be effective and have a chance to further their own career. Well, the best way to do that is meeting them at their place of need, which benefits can be a big provider for.
Brett, before we leave you, I know we've talked before about the tax plan taking effect and our taxes coming up. People have probably already seen whatever bump they're going to get, right, in their paychecks from the tax bill.
Yeah.
And so they need to focus on what as tax time approaches.
For the employee, the individual?
The individual.
Yeah. You know, I think, number one, you know, most everyone has a tax preparer or uses software.
Right.
Right. You know, so all of these systems have and processes are in place to encompass those new tax laws. I think the big thing for employees to focus on now is the withholding.
Yeah.
And from that perspective, you know, without coming up in 2019 without having the deductible expenses, what that's going to look like for that employee from a personal finance perspective.
You don't want to get caught with a big tax bill in 2019.
Exactly.
Brett, it's good seeing you. We'll talk to you again next month.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Brett McKittrick is Senior Vice President and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consultant. It's the Associated Bank Thought Leader Thursday segment. You can hear it, of course, every Thursday, but also our past Thought Leader conversations are always online at WGNradio.com. You can also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more thought leader conversations.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Relativity, one of Chicago's fastest growing and most promising tech companies, recently expanded into the fifth floor of its LaSalle Street headquarters. The legal tech company software is used by 199 of the top 200 law firms in the U.S. and more than 70 of the Fortune 100. A Chicago nonprofit made a trash robot that looks to clean up the Chicago River. Urban Rivers built a set of floating gardens in the Chicago River last year. Now it has made a robot that people can control from a website that collects actual trash from the Chicago River and keeps its gardens clean. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Soon to be out on bookstands everywhere, The Dividends of Decency: How Values-Based Leadership Will Help Business Flourish in Trump's America. We're happy to have the author of the book with us this morning. Donald Shepherd is here. Don, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning to you. I'm happy to be on The Opening Bell.
The book comes out in April, I think, is still your date for it to hit Amazon and everywhere else, right?
That's correct. I think April 15th is the release date.
So tell us about the book and why you're writing it.
Oh, well, I'll be succinct. On November 16th, 2016, I was pretty depressed with the election of Donald Trump. And I was, primarily from a business person's standpoint, disappointed because I didn't see him as a successful business person. And I wanted to write a book about what really makes a successful business, and represent people who've done all the right things to have achieved success in business. And that was really the reason I wrote the book, Steve.
You write that doing the right thing in business is doing the right thing for business, that the leadership, the values of leadership is important. And from personal experience, you write this. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Well, I started the business from scratch. It was very successful. It grew to a level where it was bought out by a much larger company. I had a valuable service. I knew my market. I tackled all the financial and delivery hurdles. It was very difficult and stressful and challenging. But when I look back, a significant factor to our survival and success was leadership. And I've learned that most, if not all, successful companies have leaders that have integrity, ethics, and values, and conduct themselves in a manner that demonstrates these values to others. So I was a values-based leader before I knew what that was, because it didn't need to be defined. Integrity, ethics, and values are what happens when no one is watching. So building a business as a values-based leader turned out, in my assessment later, to be the primary reason why I was successful and businesses are successful.
There are some who would say that the bar has fallen to a new low in many areas, in business, in politics, in so many ways of our life. What are some concrete ways to make sure that happens? I love where you say ethics and leadership. Those sort of things happen in private. You don't necessarily promote them a lot. But aside from that, what can business owners and business leaders do?
Great question. Well, I think the first and most important factor is to respect and value all people and treat them accordingly. On an individual basis, that means getting to know the person and his or her values, his or her strengths, and what each person brings to the team. But then here's the key one to Steve. Know who matters most to the success of your business. It's not profits. Customers, employees, vendors, and the larger community are all equally and critically important to your success. And that's where this issue of ethics and values and morals come in. So those are a couple. The last is one that I believe in so much, and it's celebrate diversity. And that includes hiring people smarter than you in one or more ways and represent multiple perspectives, and hire based on character, competence, and potential, nothing else. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. And one of the chapters of life that we're seeing now that I bet you would talk about is in that diversity area is how this Me Too movement has started and the Time's Up movement, how we're focusing more on that. And it seems like, as many people say, well, the leadership at the top in the White House is sort of broken. We're seeing all of these leaders, whether it be the kids from Parkland in Florida or women from the Me Too movement, rise up and sort of say, no way.
Isn't it glorious? Remember, it started the day after the inauguration with the Women's March. What's going on is that people are standing up and saying, no. We need ethics, morals, and values back in our leadership. And it's so heartwarming to see what is going on. Do you remember back, Steve, when President Trump made all those comments about the in Charlottesville about the people being equal to the protesters, blah blah blah, and all the business leaders, all the business councils, all resigned. I thought that was a memorable time as well, where the businesses said, "No, no, no, we don't represent those values, and we don't want to be part of that." I think. I find it extremely heartwarming to see how people are standing up and saying enough.
In your book, you write about principles and profits not being mutually exclusive. Talk to us a little bit more about that.
It goes back to the issue that the focus in building a business isn't on making money per se. You have to make money to survive in business. You have to. And you have to have a business plan and so on. But to get those profits, you have to have support of a lot of people. You have to have employees and customers and vendors that are loyal to what you're trying to achieve. And that's the issue. It's the working with people, respecting people, valuing people. And if you focus on those elements, respecting clients and customers, having your people believe in you because you believe in them, that's when profits occur. People understand the need to make money. Principles and profits are they end up being the principles create the profits by just that, the respecting and valuing of people and clients and so on.
We had seen an era of corporate scandals, Enron, the Lehman Brothers, all of that before the Great Recession of 2008, 2009. Do you think we're headed back to that, or do you think that perhaps the leadership in the White House under Donald Trump will be pushing us in an opposite direction, have sort of an opposite effect, perhaps?
Oh, I sure hope not, and I don't believe so. You said it earlier with all the movements and the standing up and the resistance. I believe that it's the opposite of the Trump way, that we are seeing a resurgence of saying, be accountable, be responsible as leaders in business and in social and community. And so, no, I don't think we're going to move away from it. I think, in fact, move away from doing the wrong way of running a business. All the pressure is on the other way. And you've seen it in the entertainment industry when you had all this issue with sexual harassment and so on in the entertainment industry. It's being cleaned up. People have stood up and said, no more, no more. So you asked a very good question, but a simple one. Are we going the wrong way? No, I think we're going the right way, in a much, much better way.
One of the other things that's very interesting about your story, and it sort of applies to what we're seeing today, is you're an immigrant to the United States from Canada. Here we're talking all about immigrants and how we want to keep them from coming to the United States, but they're important, so important to business, aren't they?
Oh, my goodness. Ask any business owner. First of all, many immigrants like me start businesses, hire people, help them pay their mortgages and pay their car loans. And it's a critical, critical part of it. People that come in as immigrants are needed in the workforce. They add to the workforce, not take away. Almost every employer of value knows immigration is critical from everywhere. It's not based on color of skin or religion. It's based on competence. And employers bring in people from other countries and accept them readily, not because of any exclusion, but it's fact of inclusion because they are competent. So, oh, yes. I'm an immigrant and proud of it, and I'm proud to be an American. I'm an American citizen as well. But it's critical to our society and our business to have a healthy immigration policy.
Don, best of luck with the book. I'm eager to read it, and we appreciate you being with us here this morning on the Opening Bell.
Steve, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Don Shepherd is the author of The Dividends of Decency, How Values-Based Leadership Will Help Business Flourish in Trump's America. You can check it out on Amazon.com. Pre-orders now, April 14th. Is when Amazon is listing it here. It's going to also be available in Kindle format as well. And you can find more about Don Shepherd at donshepherd.com. That's Shepherd with two P's, A-R-D, donshepherd.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 27 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are now flat to negative. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It was a kind of a tough day for the soybean market at the Board of Trade yesterday. May soybeans down 16 and a half cents, ending at 1032 and a quarter a bushel. We did see technical selling come in, pressuring the market. And, of course, we're beginning to get planting acreage reports that are larger in the soybean crop than we've seen in recent years. What about wheat? Well, 2.25 cents higher, ending at 488 and 3/4 cents a bushel. And May corn settled 3 cents lower, 388 and 3/4 cents a bushel. Turning to the livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, the live cattle futures settled higher after a volatile session of trade. April live cattle closed $1.10 higher at $123 a hundredweight. And looking at lean hogs, mostly higher after weaker cash and wholesale pork prices sort of stirred some bear spreads in the marketplace. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, March 15th. Freddie Mac reports on this week's average mortgage rates. We'll also get a report on jobless claims. The National Association of Home Builders releases its March Index of Builder Sentiment. And the Treasury Department releases money flows data for December. We'll also get a look at the Philadelphia Fed Business Outlook Survey and the Empire State Manufacturing Survey. And the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index is due out as well. EIA Natural Gas Report due today. And earnings from Broadcom expected on the earnings calendar on this Thursday, March the 15th.